Comfort 95.1 FM. And sincere apologies. The mid-morning sports will be coming your way at this time. But be rest assured that by 2:10 and by 5 p.m. more sports will be coming your way. I am Monday Thomas, and I'd like to welcome you to the second episode of the Connected Development Radio Program, proudly sponsored by Oxfam. Today's discussion is on the issue of accountability and transparency in Nigeria's extractive sector. And joining us to dissect this particular one is certainly an expert. We are joined in the studio by Iniobe Osen, Senior Research and Policy Analyst. You're welcome to the show, sir.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right, your mic needs to be fixed, but let's welcome the Kwabom State Lead Follow the Money, Mr. Ubong Ekbe. You're welcome, Mr. Ubong.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
That's right, it's Follow the Money radio program. And last week on the show, Mayanaba Sekban was here, and they talked about host community fragility. But today on the show, we're going to talk about the issues of accountabilities and transparencies in Nigeria extractive sector. And I already introduced the analyst right here in the studio. So without wasting much of the time, let's head down to the very nitty gritty of today's activity. And certainly, first question, I would like to know, briefly, give a historical background of transparency and accountability in Nigeria's extractive sector, Mr. Iniobe Osen.
Okay, yeah, thanks. Good morning, everyone, once again.
Great to have you.
Yeah, so prior to 1980, it was widely believed that the abundance of natural resources like petroleum, gold would often enable developing countries like Nigeria transit from underdevelopment, you know, to a sort of level of industrial takeoff. But with the experience we've had with resource-rich countries like Congo, Venezuela, and Nigeria, we've seen that rather than an abundance of that natural resource leading to meaningful, sustainable development for its citizens.
Okay.
Rather, these countries have been fraught with what we would like to call the resource curse or Dutch disease. So, countries like that, you know, have been fraught with grand corruption, larceny, maladministration of its petroleum industry and several sectors of its economy. We're coming from an era where ministers of petroleum in this country used to have discretionary powers to just award licenses. I'm very sure you are very much familiar with the OPL 245 scandal, where a former minister of petroleum awarded an oil prospecting license to a company that he had controlling interest in. And up to date, that matter is still being debated in court. Nigeria has lost billions of naira in terms of revenues, royalties from that particular asset due to the fact that that asset has not been developed and oil has not been extracted from that asset over time. We've had instances where ships that were arrested carrying illegal crude were accosted by naval officials, and these ships just went missing in the naval yards. Ships carrying products, you know, with volumes up to about 1 million barrels of crude, or you know, 1,000 metric tons of crude, just getting into thin air. You're also aware of the subsidy scandal that happened under the previous administration.
You've stated a whole lot of things that are not right that has been happening, and certainly that will call for a lot of attention. And we are going to be opening up the phone lines shortly to also get to hear from you as the conversation goes on. Let's turn to the Kwabim State lead, follow the money, Mr. Ubon Egbe. Let him also quickly just let us know the brief policies of the Connected Development as we move on the show.
Okay, Connected Development, it's a non-governmental organization whose core mandate is to give voice to marginalized community.
Okay.
So this Follow the Money radio program is to shed more light on the activities of the extractive industry, the role of governments to ameliorate the sufferings of the communities, and to also see how we could collaborate with government and community to seal areas of financial leakages in the extractive sector so as to ensure that community members derive full benefits of the resources that are domiciled in their domain.
All right, let me stay with you. What are the oversight functions of the government in the extractive industry?
There are lots of oversight functions of our governments that if they were properly addressed, it will go a long way to draw sufficient benefits to host community. One of them is the negligence of the Local Content Act. Subsection 7 of this act mandates that all companies employ and the 1% of upstream contract should be awarded to indigenous companies.
Okay.
So it's the responsibility of government to ensure that the local content law is enforced and not allow these oil companies to run their operations the way they like. Then, it's also one of the second oversight function I see that is not played out is the situation where the governments do not even step in to monitor the operations, the activities of these oil companies, if it is within standard international
best
practices.
So would it be advisable if governments started owning some petroleum firms, some oil companies, and so that they could be able to make sure they monitor the activities ongoing?
Well, because of the corruption that seems to be institutionalized in our system, it may not be too good. For instance, you know what's happening around the NNPC, so we are now trying to see how we can pull that out from the coffers, from the hands of government.
Okay. So you think that now that some of the companies are privatized, that we get to have more responsibilities, we know who to hold accountable? But right now you're saying that we are talking about the government oversight functions in the extractive companies, you're also saying that the government should start monitoring it, especially the private firms.
Yes, it's their responsibility to ensure that this oil companies operate within standard practice. Where you have oil spillage, environmental pollution could be avoided if government has stepped in to exercise these oversight functions. We have the State Ministry of Environment, we have the State House Assembly that are supposed to, from time to time, periodically, to get into these facilities to ensure that the operations are within acceptable limits.
All right, moving on to the next question. Let's bring on Inyobo Usen, Senior Research and Policy Analyst. How will the Petroleum Industry Act foster transparency and accountability in Nigeria extractive sector?
So prior to this time, right, that sector used to be very opaque. So access to contracts, that contracts, permits, licenses, used to be very difficult for the average citizens and people, you know, in the communities, for them to be able to effectively extract benefits from the oil extracted from their domains. It was very difficult for you to know the actual owners of some of these assets.
Okay.
So companies used to be registered in the Cayman Islands, you know, they used to mask the ownership of companies, which is to make it very easy for funds to be moved out of the country illicitly.
Okay.
But what the Section 83 of the Petroleum Industry Act has now done is to make it mandatory for these companies to submit their contracts, permits, or the licenses they sign both with government and with third-party contractors to the authority. And that authority is mandated to publicly disclose those contracts.
Okay.
And what's the benefit for the average citizen? So if you go to oil producing communities, for instance, a lot of these communities sign development agreements with these oil companies. But if you ask the average man in Ibadan, for instance, have you seen the contract signed between Mobil and your community? The answer you get from 95% of the indigenous is that no, they have not seen any contract like that. So how do you continue to agitate for certain deliverables that are supposed to come to you if you have no access to the terms and agreement that these companies have, you know, gone into with your community to be able to deliver some sort of service, you know, to your community? If you look at it at the level of the state government, are the state government really getting what it is due to them from the federal government as a result of, you know, the oil that is extracted within the geographical boundaries of that particular state? The answer is no. So every month they just go cap in hand to the federal government and take whatever it is offered. There's no metric for them to actually determine or know exactly what is supposed to come to them, right, before the end of every month, so that if there are instances where there are shortfalls, they're able to take that up.
Okay.
So you have situations where it could be happening that, you know, these states are not getting what is due, and that's largely because the terms, you know, and contracts under which a lot of these activities were set up are shrouded in secrecy. Some of these state governments don't even have access to the fiscal agreement signed between the companies and the federal government. So what the PIA now does is to now make it possible for a situation where all of this information is now in the public domain.
Okay.
So that state governments, individuals can have access to these terms, right? And now know exactly what it is supposed to come to them.
So you're saying for them to foster transparency and accountability, the Petroleum Industry Act should be made transparent to the common man?
No, a section of the Petroleum Industry Act now mandates, you know, the authority to publish all the contracts, permits, fiscal arrangements that have been signed between the companies and the government, right? And the companies and third parties. So whatever contracts, you know, that are now available in the industry are now non-confidential by law. So if you want to have access to the contract that was signed between maybe Frontier Oil and the government, you should be able to access that particular contract by provisions of the Petroleum Industry Act now. Mm. Apart from that, under the EITI, the NATI has been able to establish what you call the beneficial ownership register, right? Even if it's not perfect as it is. What that beneficial ownership register does is that it shows you the individuals or companies that have equity shares in these companies, right?
Okay.
So if for instance, Anubong has a 10% share in a Frontier Oil, you can, and you want to, not in Frontier Oil, in, let's say, an OML 13, for instance, in Akwa Ibom State, the beneficial ownership register would show you all of the individuals or companies with interest in that particular mining lease. But there are still issues with the register, because we have seen instances where as much as 25% of the equity stakes in that block is attributed to others. You cannot have that high stake equity stake in a company and we don't know who the others are. It gives room for a lot of, you know, corruption to take place. But I believe it's a starting place, you know, for us to begin to unravel a lot of the anomalies, inanities that happen in the industry.
All right, and we want to add to it?
Yeah. The beauty of that PIA is the benefits that the community stands to accrue. You won't expect a community member, the youth of the host community, to protect oil facilities when their interests is not being captured. So when these documents are made available, it will give them the boldness and the temerity to engage and ask for their benefits. For instance, they are looking around the issues of banditry, bunkering, and all of that, where the youths and the community members do not have direct benefits of these oil installations. They would not take ownership to protect and shield it from vandalism.
All right, still the Follow the Money radio program. Let's head for the break. When we return, we shall bring you on to the program as we'll be hearing from you and your own take on what's happening so far.
Join hands as we join before, so that we go feed dollar as we dollar before. Vaccines on there now. Find way then they give vaccine. Follow go vaccinate. No carry face mask play. Oh, and when you wear them cover your nose and mouth properly. Give everybody space. When you enter keke or minibus, wear your face mask. Oh, government go hold any keke or bus where passengers they do. I don't care. Church and mosque them. Now half you go to be now. Oh, and prayer no must pass 1 hour. Report any sign where make you think say you don't get COVID-19 or person where they near you he get COVID-19. Report them for any COVID-19 hospital. Government say they shine eye to make sure say then go arrest who they use this matter play.
This message now from Ministry of Information and Strategy, Akwa Ibom State.
There's no wealth greater than your health. And your sound health is important to us on Comfort 95.1 FM. For this reason, we bring you a program that attends to your health needs. Our health, our wealth. Every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. 10:30 a.m. Our Health, Our Wealth addresses health issues from the perspective of professionals to your satisfaction. To your satisfaction. So, keep a date with your host, Esther Igariva Awardi, every Thursday, 12:30 p.m. And never forget, health, health is wealth. Is wealth.
Welcome back from that break. It's still the Follow the Money radio program and sponsored by Oxfam. Now it's time for you to get also on the conversation. 018-889-951-0906-00895-1. We are talking about the issues of accountability and transparency in Nigeria's extractive sector. And right here in the studio, we have Senior Research and Policy Analyst Inyobong Sen, and as well as Uboyin Egbe, Kwaibom State Lead Follow the Money. 018-889-951-0906-00895-1. While we're still waiting for the callers, Inyobong Sen, let's throw this question for you, and which is, how does opacity in the sector affect governance and service delivery?
Thank you. Nigeria's subsidy regime is a perfect example. So in the months of, I think it was April and May, we had reports that the NNPC did not remit any of the proceeds from oil and gas into the Federation account, meaning that the money that was available in the pool for sharing, whether as 13% derivation or statutory allocation, reduced drastically. How is that possible? You are here, I'm here. Do we know the volume of oil, PMS that we consume in a day? We do not have that value. The NNPC just sits and decide that in a particular month, they are not going to remit proceeds from oil into the Federation account on the account that they made subsidy payments without any metric for actually valuing what those subsidy payments were, the amount of PMS that was consumed daily for that particular month. So without having accountability or transparency mechanisms in place that makes it possible for the public to see what exactly it is that the NNPC makes a subsidy payment, even if I'm against the subsidy regime for reasons, you know, we don't have enough time to discuss, right? It shouldn't be able to arbitrarily just decide that it's not going to remit funds to the Federation account for states to be able to share from. And what's the implication for service delivery? There's not enough money for these state governments like Akwa Ibom State to be able to carry out their plans and programs as stipulated in their annual budgets. So critical sectors like education, health, agriculture suffer because the governments cannot spend what they do not have, right? They largely depend on revenues from the Federation account as 13% derivation or statutory allocation, as the case may be, to be able to effectively implement their budgets. The second example has to do with the NDDC. So in 2019, what had accrued to the NDDC as just NDDC levy from the oil and gas companies, because the oil and gas companies are supposed to remit 3% of their annual budgets to the NDDC yearly. And in 2019 alone, what had accrued to the NDDC was more than the cumulative FAC allocation to 5 Niger Delta states in 2019 alone. But what have we seen with the NDDC? You would hardly see the NDDC contracts. They have projects littered across the Niger Delta, abandoned projects littered across the Niger Delta. If there's a project, an NDDC project in your community, right, that has been abandoned for the longest, there's hardly any office you can go to go and seek redress to say, okay, who were the contractors for this particular project? How much was allocated for this project? In which year was this project, or which year's budget was this project captured? We have none of those. So you find the NDDC as an agency of government that is just running rogue, deciding to spend money how it pleases and where it pleases. And what do you have? A lot of the funds, because that particular commission was created to develop the Niger Delta. And that particular agency has not been able to meet up with the mandates of the constitution, you know, with regards to developing the Niger Delta, because it's been, a lot of their operations have been shrouded in secrecy, and citizens have not been able to benefit from the establishment of that particular commission.
All right, as you're winding down on the Follow the Morning radio program, just last question for Ubong Ekbe, which is, does 30% of oil derivation trickle down to the tangible benefits of host communities?
Okay, last year, Kwaibom State government got over 150 billion naira as 13% oil derivation revenue from the federal government. This accrues to our states from oil being mined from within the state. So my question is, what percentage of this 13% actually goes to the oil-producing communities? If at the federal level the states agitated that a certain percentage of the revenue should get to them for being the oil-producing state. So at the state level, do you also translate that to the oil-producing communities? So we feel that if you are getting 13% from the federal account as a result or as benefits of being the state that, you know, hosts this oil resources, there are also local governments, the actual communities where these oil resources are being mined. What percentage of this 13% goes to them? So I think it is time for our state government to begin to look into it. I know in Delta State, they have Delta State Oil Producing Community Development Board. So we should have an Oil Producing Community Development Board that specifically addresses the issues of the host community. So if you are getting over 150 billion,
okay,
even if it's 1% of that amount, that's 1.5 billion. Should have gone to Ibono, Eket, Una, Esreket, Mbo, and the other oil, Eastern Obolo, and the other oil producing community. So the 13% derivation does not trickle down. There's no sign whatsoever that
so
this community.
How many percent would you be looking at?
Inuba, what do you think? I'm thinking maybe about at least 3% or 4% should go to the oil producing, the actual local government that produces the oil at the state level.
So the PI has actually solved that, right?
Okay. So quickly, just let's have your parting shot. Inyobo Nwosen, Senior Research and Policy Analyst, Budget. Your final take on the show?
So my parting shot would be that I would call for the government to speed up the implementation of the Petroleum Industry Act.
Okay.
So that host communities, right, can get benefits that are supposed to accrue to them from the oil and gas activities that go on in their domain.
All right, Kwaibom State, lead, follow the money. Let's have your parting shot.
The state government should not do to the local governments and oil producing communities the things that if the federal government did to them, they would not be happy. So if you are getting extra revenue from the federal account, by reason of oil production in their state, the oil producing communities should also get extra revenue for being the